Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream. You could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's mightiest heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm gonna have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast, the podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith. Rust.
Well, if it isn't the Star-Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, Neverlanders. Sprinkle some of that pixie dust around if you have anything left after you might have burned away a lot of it on Valentine's Day. I don't know. When you get the whatever pixie dust you have left from Valentine's Day, hopefully you have plenty left over, or maybe you generated some. You at least have lots of happiness, so you have your happy thoughts of Valentine's Day, so you can fly away to Neverland with me, Jeremy, the head lost boy around here, that's also called the Spider Pan, and also the lost boy known as the Eric. Hello.
The Eric? I'm Retlaw.
Well, yes, Retlaw. But
Retlaw, come on!
The Retlaw. Eric the Retlaw. Now, that sounds like a Viking. Eric the Retlaw.
There we go.
There you go. By law, you are red? I don't know.
As long as I'm an in-law and not an outlaw.
There you go. Yeah, I'm an Indian outlaw, half Cherokee and Charlie. Okay, never mind. That's a really, really dumb old country song that jumped in my head. Okay, well, we'll just ignore that happened, but I'll leave it in the show because why edit out my silliness? Because some people think we're funny. So
Thank you. All three of you.
Exactly.
Try the veal.
Well, one kind of cool thing that happened on Valentine's Day is Paige O'Hara is over at the Festival of the Arts down in Walt Disney World, and apparently she paid a visit on the Beast, and there's some photos that were taken. It's kind of a nice little photo off of Paige O'Hara, who, if you all didn't know, is the voice of Belle.
True, but a bit alarming.
Exactly. So that would have been a really cool thing. And I guess she's hanging out there and she's signing some things. So I don't know how long she's sticking around for the Festival of the Arts, but try to go and meet Paige O'Hara if you happen to be down there. So, yeah, that was kind of a wild, crazy, weird week. But, we've been doing some rebranding. So,
oh, we have.
Yes. A while back, I altered in Libsyn our title. So instead of just the Neverland Podcast, I wanted to kind of explain what it is we do a little bit. And so plus I've noticed there's other people trying to call themselves a Neverland Podcast that are about hypnotism and stuff. I've found some weird stuff that's gone on. We seem to be us and Skywalking Through Neverland are the two originals of Neverland. So yeehaw for us. But I thought we needed more. So I've actually rebranded on as Neverland. And then, of course, is it a colon or a semicolon? That's two dots. I don't know. But it's Neverland to Disney and beyond, because I think that encompasses the fact that we do talk a lot of course, Disney, but we go outside. We go a little beyond Disney. So I rebranded that within Libsyn, and immediately that went into Apple Podcasts and a lot of other places. So if you were looking for us on iTunes to leave a review, which, by the way, if you haven't, please do. You look for us under Neverland to Disney and Beyond. So in the course of things throughout the week, I went through on YouTube. I have a personal channel, and I also have the Neverland Podcast YouTube channel. I figured out how to rebrand and rename the titles. So now on YouTube, we are Neverland to Disney and Beyond, which I realize I have enough of a following there that I'm allowed to personalize our YouTube address. So if you go to YouTube, you can search for it, you know, or you can just type it in, Neverland to Disney and Beyond. And it's really long, I know, but it's there. And of course, on the YouTube, you can find a lot of family-friendly content and any game playing that I've been doing, which, you know, like Spider-Man. I will be returning to Kingdom Hearts very soon. I've been meaning to get on it, and I keep getting distracted because I keep getting shiny objects shining on me when I look at other game stuff. I'm like, man, I haven't played that in a long time, and I really want to go play it. It'll only take me a couple hours, right? So I got
a perfect shiny object for you.
Uh-oh.
Kingdom Hearts 3 is filled with shiny objects.
So you've been playing that one this week then, huh?
I have been. That's your goal. You need to get through Kingdom Hearts and Kingdom Hearts 2 and maybe about 15 different assorted games that go along with those.
Yeah, which are all collected in one set,
yes,
thankfully.
thankfully. But believe me, it is all leading to Kingdom Hearts 3, which, you know, it has just got some spectacular visual aspects to it. Lots of shiny things, so go for it.
Yes, must get to it. So yes, I will be doing that, but you can find all that on, of course, the Neverland Podcast YouTube page. Plus, I'm trying to get to where I make a little video of a week of sharing just a little bit of opinion or things I'm observing, and want to basically inspire your thoughts to share with us of what you think might be going along with different things going on. Some of the videos, if it's you know, I've got like a second, you know, like my own personal YouTube channel, which I've now rebranded as The Spider Pan. So, you know, It's me, which is the same as my Twitter account. I have, of course, there's Neverland PCast. There's also at The Spider Pan on Twitter if you want to follow me individually. And if you want to follow Eric, then he can tell his if he wants to.
Oh, it's EWW. But don't ask me to spell it.
Yeah, because it is kind of weird. But if you look through my followers on either one, you'll find them. So, but yes, yep. We are out there on Twitter. We like to be able to talk to you and interact, and we are trying to have some fun. Even on Instagram, I'm posting up some pictures very soon. I need to get back to it. But we used to do this thing called Marvel Monday, where we'd share like an old card, like a Marvel card image. Mm-hmm. And I want to get back to doing that. And we'll do that on Instagram, probably also on Twitter. I try to keep them somewhat different. So if you'd like to follow me both on Twitter and Instagram, I'll try to make it fun for you. But we're doing all these different things. Now, of course, I want to let everybody know that on my personal YouTube, The Spider Pan, I will have some gameplay of some games that are not quite as family friendly. And I do have some stuff up there now that's kind of a cool game because I like to play a lot of things. But there are a lot of games out there that maybe the language isn't so great, or maybe it's a little, shall we say, scary. So I do have some footage of some stuff that I don't consider Neverland appropriate. So I'm not as family friendly as you would think all the time. I am mostly family friendly, but not every game I play or not every movie I watch is maybe perfect for your little kids, you know. So, but I don't really like to do R-rated movies really at all anymore, except for occasionally I go out to one that I'm a little yeesh over the top. Like Deadpool was too much. Logan was also Logan had a good story, but dang. I've now heard Patrick Stewart use language I never would have expected, but I was curious.
That was heavy, Doc.
It was way. So I do go out to something like even like Blade Runner 2049 had a good story, but I seem like a lot of unnecessary things that didn't. I don't feel needed to be a part of the movie, but yeah, that's. But if I wanted to talk about something like that, I would do it on my personal channel because I don't feel it fits what we're trying to do here in Neverland. So I'm still a pretty squeaky clean person, but not everything not all the media I intake, I guess, is squeaky clean because I still like Resident Evil games and stuff like that. But Resident Evil has really, they've pushed into their R-rated envelope. And now even the remake of Resident Evil 2 apparently has a heck of a lot of language, which like, wow, you know, I remember back when I used to play these and you didn't have to have F-bombs. So, all right, I'm throwing in my own two cents here.
As for me, I'm playing the original NES Kirby on my Switch this week. So, yeah, nice. There's the family-friendly aspect. Actually, yeah, I was able to get myself some good 80s movies this week. I was able to track down the freshly released Blu-ray of Willow, which I watched last night and just Oh, man, this is so much fun. I enjoy it. I also picked up Uncle Buck and The Great Outdoors, two good classic John Candy movies. And yesterday I went to Goodwill and I found Time Bandits,
which I've never actually seen.
You know, and it's been well over 20 years since I last saw that.
Wow.
So yeah, I did find it interesting. In the course of 24 hours, I bought two films which are celebrating little people. Which I found amazing. But anyhow, yeah, it was 80s week here at my house this week.
Yeah, I've actually been playing a little bit at a time on my NES Classic. I've been playing some Kirby. I don't even remember how far along I am now. The boss fights kind of are tricky. You gotta get, you know, you gotta get tricky with some of the boss fights. And
oh yeah,
yeah. So I think I'm like in the third or fourth world.
Hmm.
Somewhere like that. I don't know. I pick up every once in a while and just kind of sit. Kirby is supposed to be that non-stressful game where if I just need to relax, because it's very, very cute.
Yeah. But
it's challenging at times, too. So I'm like, okay, it's too much stress. I save where I'm at and move on, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, between that, the Switch just offered a brand new game for free called Tetris 99.
Nice.
Where it sets you up against 98 other opponents who are all playing Tetris at the same time. And you can actually target other players and send bricks to their wall.
Oh, wow.
And they can do the same to you. So, that's been a little interesting to play. I've made it up into the top 20 once. Wow. Usually around the top 30 or so. With some really good players in there. But yeah, I've been doing that. I've been going through Kingdom Hearts 3. The story on that's been not been quite up to what I expected, but I've played through the Toy Story world, which had a really good and interesting point, really tied into the overall story a little bit better than I would have initially expected. Talking about how you've got vessels that have hearts within them. Well, toys are just pieces of plastic.
Yeah.
And where does that love come from? You know, and especially within that whole world. So it's been interesting to see how that tied into the overall Kingdom Hearts storyline. I'm also just starting the Tangled portion where you end up in the Kingdom of Corona. And I haven't quite met up, or rather, I'll say I haven't teamed up yet with either Flynn or Rapunzel. But I think I'm just about to that point. But yeah, a lot of good there. I'm also thinking about getting back into the Arkham games real soon. As well as I've got a couple of Lego games that I just have had sitting off to the side that I really need to work on. I've got the mm-hmm. Harry Potter collection, and I've got the Lego Marvel Superheroes and Lego Avengers that I still need to dive into.
Yeah, I've got Lego Marvel Superheroes that I dabble in every once in a while. I need to sit down on that too. And that is actually also available on the Neverland Podcast or Neverland to Disney and Beyond YouTube channel. You can see some of my footage of playing that. So, which we'll have to get. Eric, are you able to, because I guess you can do like short snippets on a Switch. You can save some of your video, but are you able to upload anything on your Switch to or stream anything?
You know, the Switch has a YouTube app on it, but I haven't figured out if there's a way to record it and stream it.
Okay. Well, because I think when I've been diving into YouTube and found this, I think I can actually give you access to the Neverland YouTube channel so you could actually post some videos of what you would like to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
So excellent. That way you can share some thoughts on different things going on. And, we'll try to make the YouTube thing a little bit more interesting and more interactive. And I'm working on trying to do more things and more videos and more fun and sharing some opinions or looking out and see what opinions are being out there and sharing my thoughts of what this could mean and hopefully getting some conversation started. So I like to, so far I've gotten into, and I feel like I want to add to it because Toy Story 4, I'm starting to feel like it's more of an agenda film. And based on footage that was on Good Morning America, Annie Potts was on Good Morning America. She had a short clip and they are retconning. And if you don't know what retcon means, you don't read any comic books, I guess. But retcon is where they go back in the past and they add history and story so they can alter something in the current timeline. And they're retconning and adding Bo Peep actually having some little adventures and doing some things. And there's a clip of her that they've added where she goes out to go and save RC. And they have it like her and Woody were like this tag team, despite we have at least two movies that she's in where she doesn't do a darn thing. So that's like they're reinventing the character, but they're trying to retcon it. And I Really, if you start a film or a television series, even just an episode, based more on agenda than having a good story, then usually the agenda you'll be pushing will cause the story to be weak and lame. And I've seen it time again, like on Arrow. That's why I quit watching Arrow. They got so much that they were trying to push agendas that they weren't writing good stories anymore. And I think part of it, we've also seen the effects that's happened on the current Star Wars movies, that they do have so much agenda, really, for going into the film, that sometimes they're leaving out some things that maybe would have made the films better, and you wouldn't have such a backlash, even though I'm still having fun with Star Wars, because it's Star Wars. I guess I'm a little forgiving, maybe, but I'm still having fun with these movies. They're just not as good as I think they could have been, but they're still better than the prequels. Maybe.
Well, you know, I when it comes to Pixar, you know, and make no mistake, Pixar has had agenda-based films. You know, WALL-E is the easiest example to think of, but even Monsters Incorporated, where you had the, you know, alternative sources of energy being a major factor in the storyline, they still found a way to make those messages come across in a good way, not necessarily pointing the finger at any specific individual, except for maybe the president by and large, but still, I think, you know, in Pixar's hands, they've got a great team of storytellers, and we've learned to trust them for what they're doing. Mm-hmm. People who don't understand Cars in any way, notwithstanding. But, you know, I personally think that this is to help explain why Bo Peep may not have been in Toy Story 3 and why, you know, Woody said that she was no longer with them. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do with it. And
yeah, I'm happy with it when I see it. I'm mm-hmm. just because it wrapped up so well to Toy Story 3 that when we heard about Toy Story 4, we wondered, well, why? And now it seems like the reason is that as an agenda is the reason, and not just we had a really great story idea. Yeah, that scares me a little.
And I understand that. But, you know, I think we're just going to have to wait and see how it plays out. And, you know, personally, you know, having got two young girls, I like to see, you know, this has been kind of an evolving thing for me, to be honest. But, you know, I like to see more female characters getting out there for them that they can look forward to. And, you know,
it
has to be done right.
Yes.
You know, I've got my issues with how Beauty and the Beast was remade. Huge issues with that. Part of that has to do with what they did to kind of retcon Belle's character. But, you know, I can't think of a better role model at this time for my girls to get them involved in Star Wars than Rey.
Yeah, even though there's some problems with that character because she seems to gain abilities that she never had to work for, and we don't see her grow. And she's not a well-developed character like Luke was. And so, I mean, I still like the character, but there's, every time she does something like, well, how did she learn to do that? It's kind of, it's grating a little bit. And especially even having, I mean, Kylo Ren, he's entertaining, but he's not a scary villain because he can get his butt kicked by somebody who's never been trained.
Kylo Ren's an angry fanboy.
Yeah, and he's not the threatening villain that we need him to be. So I would like to see him just beat her down. You know, she needs to have a failing big enough. And well, I guess we're going to have some gap of time, but I want to be able to see her seem like she's, you know, defeated and then have to grow and come back from defeat. That's what makes a good character.
Yeah, so like
I really want to see her lose.
Like realizing her Force vision wasn't what she expected.
Yeah, you know, something. I mean, there's one thing. There's a difference though between making a mistake and being defeated and failing. Because you can make mistakes and it's no biggie, but having to fail and get knocked down and then get back up—that's what makes a good character. And she has
that was. Well, and I think that there were elements of that in The Last Jedi. But we are completely getting off track here, Jeremy.
Oh, but this is good stuff. See? So, but this is the type of thing that I'm putting out on YouTube where I did have a thing where because I really want to see Rey have a failing and come from a defeated place where she has to grow and become a more developed character and stronger, and we can grow with her. And then we start rooting for her more than we ever have before. I'm like, yes, she's come back from a fall. Because why do we fall? So we can get back up again.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knows that better than Spider-Man, though.
That's right. And oh my gosh. Okay, now I let me preface this, because y'all probably know if you've listened, I wasn't a fan of Dan Slott. And it wasn't that Dan Slott can't tell a good story. I just didn't like the type of stories he was telling. So I kind of stepped away. But I did pick up that last storyline, his big kickoff, which starting with the Red Menace to where Norman Osborn gained the Carnage symbiote. Mm-hmm. I have those issues, and wow, it's a good kickoff. And I don't, it's been a while, so I don't know if this would be considered a spoiler, but I won't mention there is a major death in that storyline. Mm-hmm. But then it was passed over to Nick Spencer, and I like that. Between how Dan Slott kind of went out and what Nick Spencer has done is take all the things that I didn't like about what Dan Slott did with the character. They're putting it back in place and fitting things together and making it compelling to me again. And I am loving every issue I've read up through now, because they've got a new number one through 14 with Nick Spencer. And I really wish Ryan Ottley would come back and draw some more. I loved his artwork. Humberto Ramos, I didn't used to like his artwork, but I it's grown on me. I think he's developed as an artist and he's gotten better, and I like him better. Issue 14, I don't know who did the art on that one. It's good art, but I don't know that the style fits for what's going on with Spider-Man. He has a very fantasy style. When you get a chance to pick up 14, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's mm-hmm. very, it's an interesting art style, but I feel like it would be better if he was drawing Dark Crystal Comics. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of that artist's name, but the art has been great and the stories have been great. We've got Mary Jane back in his life and them together again. I love still actually having J. Jonah Jameson kind of getting in his way a little bit, and Peter Parker has now, although he was like science editor at the Daily Bugle, he's lost his job for a big complicated thing I don't want to spoil, but he's possibly going back to school. They've managed to bring the Lizard back where he has some human capacity, because I mean it was interesting when the Lizard went full Lizard and ate his own son, but they're trying to fix that up to where now mm-hmm. by way of clone he's got his family back and he's able to switch back and forth, and they developed something interesting that I don't know if you've gotten to see yet with that, but mm-hmm. oh my gosh, I am loving this so much.
Well, I've got to say, and I know that this wasn't necessarily Nick Spencer's doing, but I really love the relationship right now between Peter and J. Jonah Jameson.
Yes.
You know, Peter, let's just say J. Jonah now knows who Spider-Man really is.
Yeah.
And rather,
I need to find that issue because I feel like I missed out. I guess it was a dinner thing. Mm-hmm. I want to read that.
And that was actually in Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, is where that revelation came through. But the great thing is in many ways, JJJ is being the father that Peter never knew.
Yes, he's trying to be. Mm-hmm. He's not good at it, but boy, is he trying.
By no means. By no means, but it is an amazing and such a unique and different take on that relationship that has been there ever since Amazing Number One.
It's been so great. And I like even in Spectacular Spider-Man, you have those moments where J. Jonah Jameson, he gets to see what the world would be like without Spider-Man. And he's just had the revelation of how wrong he has been to try to want to get rid of him. And like, wow, no, we really need him. So I'm going to make sure that he is out there and I'm going to do everything I can to support him. And just when you mix it all together with what they're doing in those books, although I guess Spectacular is gone.
Yes.
But now we have a new version of Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man who came out with an issue number one. And oh my gosh, something happened.
Yeah. We got a new number one issue of Spider-Man. Oh, well,
yeah.
That's not what you're talking about.
Some major story that I'm not going to spoil, but whoa. Somebody's going to start yanking our heartstrings around. And wow. Tastes so salty. Bitter tears. Woo. So
yeah, well, you know, overall, I think we're definitely seeing a new age for Spider-Man. I'm not exactly a big fan of Nick Spencer because of the whole Hydra Cap situation, but he and the other writers and artists that are currently working on Spider-Man are really doing a lot to kind of reverse what happened with One More Day. And we'll just have to see what's going to happen. But, you know, even outside of Spider-Man, there's been a lot of interesting stuff going on with Venom, going deeper into the mythology of the symbiote and where they came from. And, they're not just on a planet out there, that there's some real ties to Earth as well. So, good stuff happening overall.
Yeah, I haven't been reading any of that. I've been seeing how they've been doing a lot more complicated stuff. But one other thing with the Spider-Man that's been making me very happy. I mean, granted, it was dramatic, but you know, Black Cat's always been like a partner. You know, it's like his best friend out there. And when they had to come back, that because when Doc Ock had taken over Spidey's body and taken over the job, and he was brutal and apprehended her. Because he thinks, oh, you know, Spidey's been letting you get away with too much. Well, I won't. And having him come back and trying to explain that to her, and her go full on Queen Pin, basically, is what she was. She took over the underworld. I mean, she's interesting as a villain, but like, oh, that's not how I like her best. And seeing what they, and I, all right, a little bit of spoiler here. They, with everything that went on with, we mentioned, like, the One More Day. Suddenly, they had to wipe everybody's memory with another thing. You know, he had, because there was still the potential of people knowing, Spidey went with Doctor Strange and cast a spell to make sure that everybody forgot everything about knowing who Spider-Man was. But if Spidey reveals himself as Peter Parker, all those memories will come back. So it's been, they had this really great little team up with Spidey and Black Cat in a couple issues. And they have this conversation where Black Cat's like, I don't know. I don't feel like I've been myself, but, you know, would kind of become more of a criminal again. I don't feel like myself, but I feel like something's missing and I can't quite figure out what's going on. It's like something in my mind is not there. And so Spidey just unmasks and suddenly, you know, and this tear just comes down Black Cat's face. She remembers her best friend again. And I'm like, oh, yes, thank you. That was, oh, it was poignant. I loved it. Oh,
as long as she didn't tell him that she was trying to save her son.
Right. I love how they put her into the game like that. That was so Black Cat, the whole thing. Playing with, because it seems like it's still like that early on in their friendship. And I'd like to see her come back in the next game to kind of, you know, she has that way where she'll kind of play with him a little bit. But, you know, as their friendship develops, I mean, she's very, very reliable, really. And you can trust her with everything. I mean, she's a bit of a thief, but you can trust her. And so I love having that, because Black Cat is one of my favorite female characters, probably because of the connection with Spider-Man. But she's just so much fun. So, oh, that was so great. But anyways, we've been gushing on all these like these comic books. We have we haven't really gotten to our news, but we do want to do some tributes here. Starting with Don Lusk, who was an animator on Pinocchio and Fantasia, and even Charlie Brown, passed away at the ripe old age of 105.
Yeah.
Oh, he even worked on some episodes of The Smurfs.
Yeah. Very incredible career for Don.
Let's go through this list here. He drew Geppetto's pet goldfish Cleo and Tuxedo Cat Figaro in Pinocchio. Did the Arabian Fish Dance and the Nutcracker Suite for Fantasia. He did the dog chase in Bambi. He did the mice in Cinderella. He even had Alice going down the rabbit hole in Alice in Wonderland. And then after he left Disney and joined with Bill Melendez Productions, he was working on A Boy Named Charlie Brown, Snoopy Come Home, Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, and 10 Peanuts primetime specials in the 70s, including the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. And oh my gosh, Hanna-Barbera, he directed 136 episodes of The Smurfs, Challenge of the GoBots, which, yes, I liked GoBots too. Apparently, we're not supposed to like GoBots if we like Transformers, but I like them all. Pound Puppies, the Addams Family cartoon series, and a Jetsons Flintstones TV movie. You know, I think it's probably that crossover thing that they're talking about before he retired, actually, at 80. I mean, wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the tributes that have come in for him, Mike Peraza, who I know that you've spoken with in the past, said that as with so many animation veterans, Don was as talented and was as generous to others with his advice and help over the years. He'll be missed, but his wonderful work will live on.
Yeah. And even, wow, there's even more stuff listed that he did work on Song of the South, which, by the way, I think we've hit an anniversary for Song of the South this week. Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, and Sleeping Beauty. Oh, and speaking of anniversaries, this will be, what is it, like the 20-year anniversary of The Little Mermaid? Am I thinking right? No, it's
30.
30 years. And I've even seen some pictures. There's some brand new dolls that are going to be released for A Little Mermaid. So if you happen to be a fan and you want to collect some really neat looking dolls, I don't know when they're going to be released, but I did see some pictures, probably from the New York Toy Fair, which we're going to talk about that later as well. But Don Lusk, I mean, my gosh, looking at the list, Yogi's Treasure Hunt, Pup Named Scooby-Doo. Wow.
Yeah, quite a career. What an absolutely amazing career.
So we appreciate everything he did, definitely. Look, and I'm going to let you start with this one because I just talked about Don Lusk. So get to who you get to talk about.
Well, I'll introduce this one by saying it was about 20 years ago. I was in well into my studies at college when my mom had been to Disneyland and she bought me a book, which she brought back. And, you know, I opened it up and it was signed. I thought, oh, man, this is fantastic. Thank you, Mom. The book was an encyclopedia from A to Z about everything Disney.
Wow.
Written by a gentleman by the name of Dave Smith. Dave was basically the person who created the archive at the Walt Disney Studios.
Yeah.
He spent more than four decades at Walt Disney preserving all of the treasures from film, from television, to theme parks, and even beyond. He's a Disney legend, and unfortunately, Dave passed away this week as well.
Yeah, and still young, really, at 78.
Yeah, yeah.
Comparatively, you know, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and Dave, you know, Dave really was well loved among the fan community. I think I've seen more outpourings of condolences and, you know, just pictures of him with other people on Facebook this last week, just as people celebrate his life. You know, I kind of felt a little bit sorry because, you know, a lot more has been made of the passing of Dave Smith, I think, than for Ron Miller.
It kind of seems that way. Yeah.
Yeah. But, Ron, of course, had a very personal relationship with Walt. But for Dave, you know, it's been, you know, Dave really was a fan himself.
Yeah.
He really was a big part of the fan world as well. And he brought his knowledge and he brought his, you know, the things that he could share from the archive collection and brought them out to share with the public. And, you know, he had a regular column in the Disney magazine, Ask Dave, where he would ask five trivia questions. He could write in and try and solve them and win prizes. Really, if there was anyone who knew Disney A to Z, it was Dave Smith. And he definitely is going to be missed.
And I expect a few republishes of his book might be out and made available, because there's, looking at some of his books, some of I like the quotable Walt Disney. I'd love to read that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Disney Trivia from the Vault, and then the Ultimate Disney Trivia books, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Three
and 4, yes.
Yes. I would totally get into those. Those would be so much fun. Like, I need more books. But yes, I do need more books. Wow. So that's something. Jump on Amazon and take a look. See if you can find some of these books, and maybe some of them the publishers will reprint. I'm sure they were through Disney Press. I'm sure they'll repopulate a few of those and, you know, make sure the money goes to his family, I hope.
Yes, most definitely.
Oh, wow.
But you know what? You know, but when we lose people like this, they're not really gone. They've just gone to where the lost things are.
There you go. Exactly. And speaking of which, this maybe should have belonged in the news, but I wanted to be able to comment on it in a different sort of way. But because we had heard long before that the Oscars didn't have anything set up to perform a lot of the Oscar songs. And I think you even suggested it'd be interesting if they had the music play as they did a tribute for all the actors and actresses or whatever, producers, everybody who passed away this year. Mm-hmm. That would have been pretty neat. And maybe they're going to do that, but probably not. But, you know, the interesting thing is we found out that Bette Midler is going to perform Where the Lost Things Go at the Oscar ceremony, which I think Emily Blunt did a great job, and I would like to see her do it. But then again, you know, cool, Bette Midler.
Yeah.
So that's kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that they found a way to include it into the show. I mean, they were talking of only having maybe two songs being performed, if that. And so I'm glad that they're finding a way to include this as part of their celebration and recognizing it as one of the, you know, top songs, you know, from the movies this year.
Yeah. Even though I'm still probably not going to watch the Oscars, I got tired of watching these award shows long ago.
Oh, you mean the show where everyone gets to stand up, pat each other on the back, and talk about how their politics are better than everybody else's?
Yeah, and virtue signal and everything else. And yeah. What happened to the days where they'd get up there, thank God, thank all the people they worked with on the film, and then smile and wave, and we're thankful we saw them. But yeah.
Oh, I think we lost those days you know, back when we lost John Wayne and Bob Hope.
Oh, you lost my childhood. My childhood. I remember Bob Hope always coming on with his little hat on and talking about his golf game. I miss Bob Hope. So, all right. You know, despite us having to go through a few events, we do need to get on to the news, which is actually completely separate.
I got a box of Thin Mints and a box of Tagalongs I got to get through here. Okay.
Okay.
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
All right, so this is kind of neat. I didn't know that they did anything like this, but there is Girl Scout weekends at Walt Disney World. Did you know anything about this?
No, this is news to me completely. But again, well, I'm glad I got my Tagalogs and Thin Mints ready to go.
Which, by the way, a little bit of a secret. If you have an Aldi nearby you, you can find the same cookies year round.
Yeah, no, I was just telling my wife, you know, I can get Keebler variants of everything except for the Tagalongs.
Yeah, and the Girl Scout cookies aren't even made from real Girl Scouts.
Oh, man. Well, Wednesday Addams was really the one who brought that to our attention.
Exactly. Sort of like baby oil is not made out of babies. Why is that? Anyways, the registration has actually just opened. They're going to have Girl Scout weekends at Disneyland Resort in April, May, and June of this year. And this is part of the Disney Youth Education Series. They're going to take Girl Scouts ages 5 to 18, go on some adventures through Disneyland Park that's supposed to be educational, also through Disney California Adventure Park. You're going to teach leadership and storytelling and culinary arts and marketing, physics, and music. And apparently,
there we go.
Not cookies. So they're supposed to do a lot of hands-on stuff. If you go to the Disney Parks blog, they have a thing that says click here to register for the limited time experience. And so you could, I guess I don't know if they mainly want parents or if they mainly want your troop leaders to come and set up, but you know, go and check out stuff. But I do I like this program here, what they're saying, because you know, teaching leadership and physics and music and storytelling, that's good stuff.
And actually, if you go to Disney Parks blog and click on that link, it'll take you to all of the different series that they have available. They've got Creating a Leadership Legacy, Designing a Disney Story, Discovering Marine Life Conservation, Discovering the American Spirit, Disney Culinary Arts, Disney's Approach to Leadership and Teamwork, Disney Leadership Strategies, Energy and Waves Physics Lab, Everyday Chemistry, Exploring Careers in Marine Sciences, Exploring Careers in the Zoological Sciences, Exploring the Golden State, Introduction to Global Citizenship, Managing Your Personal Brand, Marketing the Story of Your Visual Brand, Principles of Animal Behavior, Properties of Motion Physics Lab, Sustainable Practices in Wildlife Conservation, Techniques of Teamwork, The Evolution of Technology, The Science Behind the Seeds, and the Science of Disney Imagineering. There's over 20 options that are available through these educational programs that Disney is offering. But yeah, you know, when it comes to Girl Scouts and camping, I could have sworn that Shelley Duvall took Troop Beverly Hills out camping. Anyhow.
Yeah, well, that was Troop Beverly Hills. They weren't Girl Scouts. It was some other thing. But yeah, I guess Girl Scouts have maybe changed. And you know, I hope, because this is all good stuff. This is good stuff they're teaching the girls. But maybe, you know, you're looking for that camping experience as well. And so I would talk to your troop leaders and say, hey, you know, I'd like for the girls to be able to go out and camp and do things outdoors and be able to, because it's nice to go and learn about it at Disney, you know. But
oh, yeah,
learning about it in an actual environment and going out and exploring a little bit, I think some girls would really dig that. There might be some girls who don't want that, but you know, apparently there are some parents who really wanted that for their children. And I'm thinking, you know, hey, just talk to your leaders. I'm sure that they would like to go that direction. You know, give it a shot.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, there's a lot of good things
going on.
Oh yeah. So. Well, there's a few things I've been searching for lately. I left my speeder bike park somewhere, and I am just looking for my protocol droid. And yeah,
I think he hopped on it and drove off.
Aha.
Which, you know, C-3PO is not a very good driver on speeder bikes. So,
I was just going to say, I know that he doesn't like, traveling on a starship.
Yeah, but he's still going to pilot one. You just won't find him waiting in the queue line anymore yelling at R2.
Yeah, this is one of the more interesting rumors we've heard this week. Star Tours in Walt Disney World is going to have a little bit of a refurbishment. And part of that is while the ride's still going to be taking on guests, we might be losing C-3PO from the queue for a short time.
Yeah, temporarily. But this comes from Chip and Company. This is the only place that I've seen this information. It's supposed to have started here today, the 17th, as we're recording it. So if you're going and you're not seeing him in this, most likely in Walt Disney World, if you're not seeing C-3PO, let us know and confirm this. Because, I mean, I don't know where they would be moving him to. I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless they're just fixing him up a little bit.
Yeah, which it sounds like is the case. I mean,
yeah.
Star Tours has been playing for well over 30 years at Hollywood Studios now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that he's seen and gotten some attention during previous refurbs. You know, it seems to me like, you know, every once in a while they'll just cycle an animatronic out of the ride, out of any given ride at any time, just to make sure that it's fully repaired and taken care of before they bring it back on stage again. So I think this is what we're looking at, because C-3PO has a very important role there as you're waiting in line and queuing to get on to Star Tours.
Yeah, so if he's gone, it's temporary.
Mm-hmm.
But the speeder bike, we don't know. We just know there was a photo op in Walt Disney World with a speeder bike, which I don't remember seeing when I was there. I would have loved to have gotten this picture. It's been behind a barricade.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I think for our friends who have never been to Hollywood Studios, the outside of Star Tours is set to look up like the forest moon of Endor.
Right.
You have giant trees there, and
really cool.
And there's this opportunity for you to sit on a speeder bike to get your photo taken. Actually, not only have the walls gone up, they have now come down, and it's been confirmed that photo opportunity is no longer available, at least as it used to be. So, you know, it's hard to say if they've removed that so that they can include it as part of Galaxy's Edge, which I certainly hope they do.
Yeah,
and it makes sense to me that that's what they would do.
Yeah, and that's okay. If you need to go over and it's not where you expect, okay, Galaxy's Edge, I think it's going to be connected to Hollywood Studios anyway, if not Magic Kingdom. I think it's supposed to be Hollywood Studios. Because that makes more sense. But if you happen to be at Magic Kingdom and you get the urge to go over there, well, then again, I don't know if it's... I did see a list of everywhere it's connected, but the gondolas, they have actually been doing some tests this week.
Yeah.
For the Disney Skylander gondola. So they did some test runs over at Walt Disney World, and it apparently running pretty smoothly. Last we heard, though, there is no air conditioning on these things.
Summer's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, looking at the test vehicle here, it doesn't appear to be any windows or anything, so maybe the heat's just not going to get in on this. Of course, I would like to have a bit of window so I could watch things go by. It might be kind of neat, but it looks completely sealed.
Well, this what they have showing here is the vehicle is completely wrapped up in some sort of material. So you can actually see the vehicle itself. You're just saying that it's wrapped up. But we've seen concept art for these. And, they will have windows. You will be able to see out of them.
Good.
It's just for right now, until they actually unwrap them, they're just keeping everything, you know, I would say, I'd say partly for secrets, but also probably also for cleanliness.
Yeah.
If they keep them wrapped up, they don't need to wash them down every day.
Oh, here we go. From Disney's Hollywood Studios in Epcot to four resort hotels, the Art of Animation, Pop Century Resort, Caribbean Beach Resort, as well as the proposed 15th Disney Vacation Club property, Disney's Riviera Resort. So you can't use it from Magic Kingdom. But if you happen to be at the resort and you're headed out to Hollywood Studios to go find that speeder bike in case it's been moved over to I forgot what the space station is there in Galaxy's Edge.
Batu?
Well, Batu's the planet.
Oh, Black Spire. Outpost.
Yeah, Black Spire Outpost. I knew it was Black something, but yeah, if you want to see over a Black Spire Outpost, if the speeder happened to be sitting around there, then you could still take the gondola from your resort. But if I guess if this goes over very well, then maybe they'll be able to expand it, I'm guessing, and hit some of the other areas. But then again, they have so much good transportation. I mean, you can take that monorail pretty much nearly anywhere you want to go.
Well, at Disney World, the monorail only runs between Ticket and Transportation Center, Magic Kingdom, the Polynesian, the Grand Floridian, and the Contemporary Resort, and Epcot.
Yeah.
You know, Epcot and MGM or Epcot and Hollywood Studios are connected by a boat system. So you can actually take a boat from the International Gateway over to just outside the entrance of Hollywood Studios. And the gondolas are just going to add a little bit more accessibility. But if this is successful, you know, they might be able to run a line up to the Magic Kingdom and a line out to Animal Kingdom.
Yeah. I mean, heck, when I was there, the only thing we transported on was a bus. So,
but, you know, and even the bus system I found was, you know, really easy to navigate.
Yeah.
I think I may have gone out on a, you know, a really light weekend or something from what I've heard. But, you know,
you could ride on the back of a bird if you wanted to.
You really could. You really could. You might even be able to see a bird from way up there, too.
Yeah. Kevin is now appearing in his Animal Kingdom.
Yes. Now, Kevin, you might recall, was the large exotic bird from Up.
Yep. Which they realized Kevin was a mama.
Yes.
But there's a picture here on the Disney Parks blog of the Kevin, and basically whoever is Kevin is... Okay, I'm sorry, I'm ruining the magic. I won't. But it's kind of goofy when you see, because it's... legs coming out of this fat body where there's no real arms or anything. There's these tiny little wings that maybe they can... I'm hoping that they can... Okay, I'm going to just break the magic, because this is what I'm imagining, is the person on the inside is able to maybe puppet the head and puppet the wings around a little bit, maybe?
I think he shares a lot in common with Big Bird from Sesame Street.
Except for Big Bird has at least one workable arm.
Yeah.
And because the neck is longer than a regular arm would be.
There's definitely going to have to be some sort of pulleys and puppetry system that's in there. But yeah, the video that I've seen looks pretty spectacular of Kevin. I thought it was
the video yet.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty convincing walk around character that they have there. And hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more of Kevin at Animal Kingdom here for quite some time.
Yeah, especially, you know, because they have Up has taken over the bird show. It'd be kind of fun for Kevin to come walking around into that. I hope that's part of the idea.
Well, but it's a bird adventure.
Right. You might want to have some ice cream, though, while you're out there watching a show around Walt Disney World.
Oh, yes.
Especially, and I thought maybe for a while when I saw these how neat it would be, because the kitchen sink, if you order the kitchen sink, you get to keep your bowl. It's a souvenir. Mm-hmm. However, these are not souvenirs. These are just small little ice cream cups that feature, you can get Mickey's shorts, so it's red and has like two yellow buttons, or a mini where it's red with white polka dots. And these are the new ice cream cups, actually, you can find at Magic Kingdom. So you can have your ice cream, or I bet you can get a Dole Whip served in there. It wouldn't surprise me.
I would bet.
In fact, I've even heard of a new Dole Whip flavor based on Hey Hey from Moana, where it's got like some different flavors mixed in over at, I forgot what they call it, over by the Tiki Room. That's the new area that you'd be in.
Sunshine Terrace, I believe.
Sunshine Terrace, yeah. So I'm hearing all kinds of good stuff about some new flavors over there that I would definitely love to check out.
Well, you know, and I'll admit, I've made no secret of this. We're planning on being Walt Disney World annual pass holders this year. Awesome. I will gladly volunteer to test these out.
You volunteer as tribute.
You can twist my arm. I will go ahead and I will sacrifice so that I can make sure that, you know, these are edible and, you know, report back and critique how good they are.
Yeah. But here, as a frozen treat, I bet you're not going to be interested in, because neither one of us are drinkers. But the Paddlefish restaurant out in Disney Springs actually has this new push-up pop kind of frozen alcoholic stuff that I thought was kind of funny.
Some people got to get their buzz one way or another. So,
yeah. With it being that sort of a treat, I would go out without the family. Just go out, maybe you and your spouse or whatever, to enjoy this, because the kid's going to look at this as being an ice cream treat and going to want some, and you can't give him any, you know?
Well, maybe we can just, you know, go and track down some Flintstones push-up pops. for
him. Something like that. I'm sure there'll be something around Disney Springs for them to enjoy.
Yeah, but it's just, push them up, you can pull them down, go up and down, you know, up and down.
Yeah, you can suck them and suck them and suck them, and then they'll always get smaller. Sorry, Willy Wonka, we failed. They get smaller.
Oh, that's true. But again, they go up and down.
Up and down.
Almost like an elevator.
Right. And it could be terrifying if you have to wait a little bit longer.
Well, I don't drink, so those kind of are a little terrifying to me. So.
Yeah. I like this, though, in the fact that, okay, so at Hollywood Studios, in case you didn't understand where we're going, the Tower of Terror, they're going to do some refurbishment, but they're not going to close the ride down. They're just going to reduce the amount of working elevators. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take you longer to get through it there throughout the spring. And maybe a little bit during the summer, but they should hopefully have it done early enough in summertime. They want to have this done before Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opens. So
yeah,
it's nice that you can still get on the ride. I kind of appreciate that they didn't close down the whole thing and you're still doing a refurbishment. And I've heard it really needs it because I've heard some of the bits of the effects going through the actual Twilight Zone. Some stuff has just kind of been covered up or whatever. So it really needs to get kind of spit polished and shined up. So,
well, and as the superior Tower of Terror, it does need a bit of a spit and polish to it here. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Well, and
it's the only Tower of Terror now, isn't it? Or do they have one overseas somewhere?
There's still one in Paris.
Okay.
They've still got the Tower of Terror in Paris. You know, however, Hong Kong Disneyland has the Hightower Hotel, which has a very similar concept and looks almost exactly like the towers in Paris now, and formerly in DCA before it got all guardianed up.
Yeah. But, I guess their galaxy's not in danger in the Twilight Zone. You don't need guardians. I guess.
Oh, boy. But yeah, I mean, it's good to see it get a bit of a refresh. So we'll be looking forward to that too. You know, also speaking of pop-ups,
there's your crossover.
Yeah. You know, they closed ESPN's zone at Downtown Disney in California, right?
Yeah, we heard about that a while back.
Yep, that was part of the whole plan to close down that area of Downtown Disney and build a brand new resort. Well, the hotel has been canceled. So now they've got three large buildings that are sitting vacant. The old Rainforest Cafe, the old AMC Theaters, and the ESPN Zone. Well, knowing Disney, and they don't like to keep too much stuff empty for too long, they found a way to utilize that building.
Yeah.
And also cross-promote.
Exactly. And really, you know, this 90 years of Mickey is kind of a good time to release this sort of a thing. Although apparently you are going to have to pay extra for this. This is a ticketed event going on, but it's a Mickey celebration where basically you're going and doing photo ops.
You can take a seat on Minnie's plush sofa or pose under one of her giant bows and hearts.
So I mean, it's pretty neat, and I have seen I guess it was mainly in some of my classes we looked at some of this. There are places in some cities where you go in and you pay money to take specialized selfies. Like if you want to have money flung at you and take selfies, you can do that at these certain selfie locations, and you pay money like you're going to a portrait studio, but you're just taking a selfie. They're just creating an environment, and that's what this sounds like to me, except for you're getting a Mickey or Minnie type of environment. So I mean, that's pretty cool,
you know. And I wouldn't be surprised if Mickey or Minnie, because of this ticketed, I won't be surprised if Mickey or Minnie happen to show up.
Yes, so that way you can take a selfie with Mickey or Minnie.
Exactly.
In a really neat environment. Not that you can't do it in the parks, but this gives you even more options, okay?
Yeah.
It makes sense. Go with it. Go with me here.
Exactly.
Oh, but this, there's times I would want to visit New York, and this would be the week to visit New York because they had a big toy fair. They do it every year. And I'm sure there's a lot more than all the stuff that I've pulled up and looked at, but I tried to grab some of the more interesting things. And this top of the list thing, this is the stuff I promise you I will try to buy some. This is going to be a Target exclusive, selling at about $9.99 each. a Star Wars retro collection. And their first line is going to be Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia Organa, Stormtrooper, Chewbacca, and Han Solo.
And now, I
see Grand Moff Tarkin in the picture, but he's not listed in the first round.
Probably second wave.
Oh, wait, here we go. So he says he's a character which has never been released during the original Kenner lineup. He'll be packed in the Star Wars Escape the Death Star board game. The game will cost $19.99, and it will not be an exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So you now can't get Grand Moff Tarkin. You just have to buy that Escape the Death Star board game, which did you ever play that? It was great.
I never did, so I'm going to save up my $20.
Yes, I am. I'm so excited for that. I didn't see this before.
The great thing about this is it's the same design as the original 1978 figures that Kenner put out, all that time ago. So, these are the ones with the lightsabers that actually go up into the arm of the character.
Yeah. Except it says Hasbro on the back instead of Kenner now.
Yeah. which is sad, but even the card looks like it's been distressed. It looks like it's been around for a long time.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
But yeah, I love those old figures. Unfortunately, the oldest figure that I have is the Rancor Keeper from Return of the Jedi, and he's really not that good of a leaker.
Funny enough, I have a Rancor.
There you go.
The whole vintage Rancor. So we'll have to do photos of them together when you come in for. Oh, by the way, we haven't mentioned. We need to mention every week Planet Comic Con.
Yes,
March 29th, 30th, 31st. Our panel will be on the 30th at 10:30. We're going to go over some of the artists that came from the Laugh-O-Gram Studios and what they did after the business failed with Walt. So Walt having an impact even when he fails. Quick little throw out there. Go to planetcomiccon.com to find out how to get tickets here in Kansas City. So
walk, don't run.
Exactly, because it's safety. I did see some people on this. I think in the Skywalking Through Neverland, there's people concerned like, well, but what about we like our vintage, our collected figures and the value of them. Like, you know what? That's not even the concern. This is just I want these.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have them. I collect a lot of different little things, and we're going to talk about collecting things here in a bit. Just because I like to have them. I've got some Funkos that I don't take out of the box because they're like decorations. I like to put them on the shelves and be able to look at them. There are some things we just collect, some little toys that we just want to hang on the wall and admire them.
My Funkos don't live in their boxes.
Well, that's okay. If that's the way you enjoy them, you do that. I keep mine in the boxes because I like it. If it's good packaging, if the packaging is kind of neat, I like it.
Well, I don't know if we want to keep this next toy in the box, though.
Yeah, I know. I'd play with this one. Did you watch the video on this? I don't really want to jump the audio on here, but the video was pretty.
Yeah, I haven't seen the video. I saw a Facebook post about it and this article about it that we are looking at as well.
Well, apparently it's on Instagram. I don't know who the actual poster was. It's like, the Toys You Want is the Instagram that someone has. And they got video, and it's a Buzz Lightyear. And see, with it walking, I wasn't sure what to expect. But it actually turns from hips, and it's a walking Buzz Lightyear, and he talks. And then at one point, he'll go like, oh, no, danger, and he'll start to scoot back.
Oh, wow.
So that way he doesn't continue walking and falling off a table or something. He'll walk forward a little bit, kind of swivel his hips, and he's talking, we got to find Woody. Oh, no, Woody's in danger. And he'll shuffle back and shuffle backwards. So it's really kind of neat because the legs are not really bending at the knees or anything. He's he's swiveling and ends up kind of moving along. So it's that way it keeps it simple and it keeps the toy from becoming super expensive, because if it was like this fully animated walking legs that they managed to do, that toy would be pricey. But this, it's a very simple little mechanism and he just talks, and so they can retail it fairly inexpensively. Granted, this is Disney. They're going to sell it for a lot, but this is pretty fun. And yeah, I would take this out of the box and I would walk him across the table. Totally. It's cool.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to this Ultimate Walking Buzz Lightyear.
Yes, sounds like a lot of fun. But oh, did you see? I only saw photos of this. Pixel Dan has a video about these. But you might be familiar with Super 7. They do. They've been making their own versions of some Master of the Universe vintage style figures. But they actually at the Toy Fair showed Masters of the Universe figures based on the 1987 film. Was it 87? Yeah,
yep.
I believe so.
Yep. Yep.
Although it doesn't quite look like Dolph Lundgren, probably because you'd have to pay extra to get his likeness.
Quite possibly, but the Skeletor.
Yeah, well, because he had stuff on his face. So you, yeah. You, but these look amazing.
Yes, yes, they certainly do. Only I didn't see Gwildor in there.
Well, maybe they'll get one in there. I didn't see the little lizard guy, I don't think, either, that breathed the original figure. You know, they had where he breathed sparks.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even though he doesn't live that long in the movie, really. Skeletor gets fed up with him fast, and shoop, he doesn't just call you a mutton-headed moron or whatever. He just kills you in the film. Yeah. Well, these look really cool, but, you know, if this comes through that Maddie collector thing, it's going to be, you know, these are going to be super expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why I don't have any.
You know, I was at Target the other day, and I saw these DC characters that look like He-Man figures. Like they had a barbarian type of Batman and a barbarian type Joker. And they had their own, it wasn't Castle Grayskull, but a Batcave that was set up very similar to Castle Grayskull. They were made by Funko and designed to look like they would fit in with the Masters of the Universe line.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I said, okay, I can get down with that. I might have to look into those. Because the only Master of the Universe type of thing I've been seeing anymore is over at Vintage Stock. I did see, I think Super 7 has made these, but they are like, I would say like, I think they're like bendables type of little Master of the Universe figures. So they're not really shaped the same way, but they're the characters. Mm-hmm. But for a very small, maybe 3-inch, you know, about the size of a G.I. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Like 3¼ inch. These things were selling for like $30.
Oh, wow.
For a very small figure. And Mattel, I have issues with you and your pricing. You're gouging the collectors. And I don't think it's right. But one thing would might be worth the price, although Transformers are rather expensive. But how would you like to have a Transformer that turns out to be the Ecto-1?
I would love that. You know, I missed out on the Star Wars Transformer figures. This is something that I want.
He's called Ectotron. And he ain't afraid of no Decepticon.
nor any ghosts.
Right. I actually do have one of the Star Wars Transformers. I won one in some sort of a Star Wars, I think it was a trivia. I don't know. I can't remember how I won it, but I've got a Darth Vader that turns into his custom TIE fighter.
Mm-hmm.
That I've not taken out of the package and played with because it's kind of cool that way.
Well, I've actually come across a couple of the Millennium Falcon, which turns into both Han and Chewie.
Oh, neat.
And there was an Anakin one. It was his Jedi Starship. There was also an Obi-Wan Kenobi that changed out of his starship. And I think there was even an Emperor Palpatine made out of the Y-Wing, or not the Y-Wing, out of his shuttle.
Hmm. Yeah, which the ones that are trying to look human like that kind of look a little funky. Darth Vader, though, the picture of it, what it looks like transformed would be all right because he's, you know, kind of got all the weird stuff on him anyway. The other ones are a little weird when you know, they kind of like, you know, like Mega Maid from Spaceballs. You know?
Yeah.
little robotic looking Han Solo, but it's still really neat.
Yeah. But now that we're getting this, I want to know, when are we getting a DeLorean Transformer?
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
You know, we need to have that.
Well, we kind of did with the Mask series because we had one that, that didn't really transform.
That was Mask.
Okay? It didn't transform. It converted and, you know, and flew. Well, it flew, so that's pretty close.
Mm. Yeah. Not a robot, though. All of this talk about Star Wars, and I know we've got these toys coming in the spring. It's a Star Wars movie release year. Are we going to have a Force Friday this year?
Not just Force Friday, but a triple Force Friday. October 4th, midnight. Well, 1 minute after midnight. October 4th. They're going to have some new figures from the upcoming movie. Figures from this EA game, The Fallen Jedi, or The Fallen Order. The Mandalorian series. We'll have some toys.
In fact, I know we didn't talk about this in our news section, but both the principal filming for Star Wars Episode 9 and The Mandalorian wrapped up the same day this week.
I didn't know The Mandalorian wrapped. I saw the Episode 9 wrapping.
Yeah, it wrapped the same day. In fact, if you go back during this week, you'll see that there's a Mandalorian helmet signed by all of the cast members.
Oh, wow.
And crew members. So,
wow.
So, sorry, that was a bit of a detour off of this. But, yeah, that's, you know, again, a good reminder that we're not just getting a new movie. We're getting a new series this year, too.
Oh, man, so much good stuff.
Oh, and again, we know Disney that. Plus. Oh, yes. Well, Disney we know Plus. That The Mandalorian isn't the only live action series coming to Disney Plus.
Yeah, we got a little bit of information about, I guess it's just a mini series of Loki. And we don't know if this is a prequel happening later. Maybe somehow Loki is tricky. He might somehow be alive. Or, you know, Loki being, you know, kind of immortal, there's even speculation he could travel. How about this could happen a lot of different times? And who knows what? But we know the showrunner for Loki will be Michael Waldron, who has been the showrunner for Rick and Morty, which I've never watched before, but I know is very popular. So I'm sure there's going to be some good sense of humor and stuff going on with this series, but that sounds like probably a pretty good mix of things.
Yeah. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yep. And once again, Disney Plus coming very, very soon, because, I mean, Mandalorian and Loki and much potential.
You know, and only 2.5 months until we know if Loki's really dead.
Right. We'll finally get to, well, I don't know if they might not show him pop up. Who knows?
Or maybe the Loki we've seen is a Skrull.
Oh, dude. There's so much weird stuff that can happen. We don't know. So many wild stuff. But speaking of weird, wild stuff, I hear some crazy things going on over in the trailer park.
Mama, now the gator got in the house.
Now the gator? Give me that shovel. Come here.
Get him, Mama. Get that gator.
The Neverland Trailer Park.
Okay, so this is the movie we knew was coming. And I saw a lot of people going like, yes, the reaction to getting a look at Will Smith as the genie was not quite what it was expected. So Disney seemed to have hurried and tossed this out. Because this, despite my thoughts on it, I mean, that when I looked at it, there was already 27,000 likes for Frozen 2, which I would play the audio for you of that trailer. But really, all it was some music. And not much for sound. It's a visual thing of what you've got to go for. Well, granted, you know, I didn't think Frozen was really that good. I think I was able to hang into it because of Olaf and Sven were entertaining. I didn't find a lot of the stories that compelling. But one thing, and I think I'm going to make a YouTube video. We do have like maybe first season episode. I actually went through with the song Let It Go and illustrated how Elsa was really kind of the villain. And if you look at it, Frozen is a redemption story.
Yeah, in that aspect. Yeah, very much so.
If you take that, it makes Elsa a little bit more interesting.
Well, Elsa's the villain.
So.
Yeah, the Snow Queen was always the villain
right.
in the original fable.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where they went through. And if you analyze that song, it is a villain song.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to dive into that and make another video because it's fun. And so we'll have a video kind of going through that. But, you know, Walt doesn't like to do sequels. Of course, I guess we said that about, you know, Mary Poppins Returns. That turned out to be good. So animated sequels like this made from the Disney studios. You know, of course, we had Wreck-It Ralph 2, but I thought Wreck-It Ralph 2 was nowhere near as good as the original. So, oh, look, it's a sequel to a movie that I thought was just OK. So I'm really not excited.
Well, you know, Frozen made a lot of money.
Yeah, money. So, of course, they got to make a second one for more money. But, you know, this opening of this, we see Elsa, who, for whatever reason, is attempting to walk on water, cross the ocean or whatever. The whole time, the thoughts going through my head, why don't you just make a snow slide? Because we've seen, you know, Frozone can do it. Iceman can do it. I think we saw her kind of do a snow slide with Anna in the original film. She kind of slides her along. Why doesn't she just try to get over the ocean that way? Or also the other powers that are unexplained. She was able to kind of make her own clothing, and she can make ice skates. Can she, maybe because she can make a good strong fabric, can she just make a boat? But I don't know. Maybe I'm not supposed to ask these questions. I don't know. So it didn't get me excited at all. I'm sorry. People are going to be like, what? But it's Frozen 2. But I'm having a hard time caring. If we get to see what the story is and I see something about the story that to me would be compelling, I might get excited for it. But really, I'm like, I thought the first one was just OK. I don't think it lives up to like Tangled. I love Tangled. And Moana was better even than Frozen. I think they've had better movies than Frozen. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying it was just okay. It didn't really click with me, but it did click with a lot of people. And so a lot of people are going to go to this. And so y'all are going to have fun. I will try to find some enjoyment, most likely in Olaf, because I like Olaf. Olaf's funny.
Well, so, as long as Alan Tudyk's in it, I'm good.
There you go. They got to find a way to put Alan Tudyk in there again somehow or another. He has to have a new character, which...
We could always find out what the Duke of Weaselton's up to.
Exactly. Weaselton.
Well, but the thing that came across to me is this is going to be a very different story. This was a dark trailer.
We'd hope so.
Yeah. Well, it was a dark trailer. There's a bit more action, a bit more adventure going on with this. The very last image is Anna turning around and brandishing a weapon. So,
yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to see what's going on.
But yeah, at this point, the only excitement that really that makes sense to me is that if there is a Frozen 2, would be enough to generate some excitement. But we know nothing of the story that I would get me excited. Once I know something of story, then that might get me excited. But right now, we don't know anything.
Yeah. Well, as long as Olaf is not going around looking for new traditions.
Yeah, which was cute, but I'd probably been better watching it on TV.
Yeah,
if I would have watched it at all, I might have because I like Olaf, but that's okay.
Well, but you know,
Hans, I am excited for.
Yes.
You were about to say something about Hans Christian Andersen being a great writer.
Hans Christian Andersen was a great writer, did a lot of great things with fantasy, but I'd say that there's actually someone who would lord it over him.
Oh yeah, with several rings and then one ring to rule them all.
And in the darkness behind. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Tell me a story.
It's a story about journeys.
The journeys we take to prove ourselves.
It's about inventions. It's about potent magic, magic beyond anything anyone has ever felt before. About what it means to love and to be loved.
About courage.
It's about fellowship.
So that was the trailer for a film I didn't even know was coming called Tolkien, about J.R.R. Tolkien. And oh my golly, this was really kind of neat because it's finding clever ways really to show how his life experiences fed into his imagination of what later would be brought into his fantasy world of Middle Earth. And so hopefully we get to see some things that might be more familiar with the Silmarillion, if you've read that. I don't know. I'm also hoping that this goes far enough to where we get to see him meet C.S. Lewis.
Ah, that would be really good. You know, definitely, I'm sure we're going to see some parallels between him and his wife and Luthien and Beren.
Yeah.
His wife was very much the inspiration for that saga, but yes. It'll definitely be interesting to see. I know Tolkien always said that The Lord of the Rings was not an allegory for World War II, but you have to admit, with everything that he went through, especially with his experiences in World War I, it did feed into what became Middle Earth and stories and the legends that he created. And I always find it just fascinating that the main reason he came up with these stories was to have a reason for his elvish languages to exist.
There you go. That's funny. Yeah, because he was a linguist.
Yes.
So, yeah. And you know what? Looking at this, I'm sure it's not going to be as factual as it could be. I'm sure there's a lot of entertainment. It reminds me a little bit of The Man Who Invented Christmas, which I love that film.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing, which I actually believe is now on Netflix, so I need to check it out.
Oh, you never got to see that, huh?
No.
Oh,
no.
It is a great movie. It's got enough, I guess, facts of Charles Dickens, but of course it's very fanciful of showing some of the things that may have inspired the Christmas Carol.
And
good stuff.
I believe the conceit is that he has his, the movie dramatizes an experience where he gets his own visits from ghosts.
Yeah, pretty much in a weird way. I haven't watched it since the theater. It seemed like it quietly came out on video, and I missed out on getting a Blu-ray, which I did see some DVDs that I wasn't able to pick it up over Christmas, but I do need to get a copy. But now, knowing it's on Netflix, I may pull it up and watch it even if it's not Christmas, because it was a very enjoyable film. Tolkien is anywhere on that caliber, I'm going to enjoy it as well.
To Disney and beyond.
All right. So we talked about collecting some toys and toys that we were played with. I've got a little bit of audio from a fellow by the name of John Losh, who's a guy we don't necessarily work together, but we both work at the same community radio station. Our shows used to be back to back on Saturday mornings, but they've moved me now to Friday nights on 102.7 FM. KPGZ, which you can find us on TuneIn and hear us there. And I'm on Central Time 9 p.m. on Friday nights playing some Christian rock stuff. But he really wanted to come on the show and talk about stuff. And he likes to collect some Hot Wheels, although he doesn't have as nearly as much as what he used to have. But he also likes to collect trains, and he really loves trains, which reminds me of Walt quite a bit. So I thought it would be fun to talk to him a little bit about that. Now, this is only like a 16-minute bit of conversation that I have with him. But I talked to him for like an hour, and the conversation wandered everywhere from Star Trek to genealogy and all kinds of different stuff. That's going to be available exclusively to our Patreon supporters of $5 or more. I will get that uploaded for you. So if you were interested in hearing the entire conversation, you can have it. But I've just got 16 minutes of it that I think it'll be interesting. But to kind of help flesh out this conversation, and you'll hear me talk a little bit about some of the Hot Wheels that I had, but let me get Eric started with I mentioned how all my cars, they had names and personalities and characters. I would name them based upon something of an attribute of what the car was. Like if it had a number on it, that was their name was that number, I wasn't coming up with Lightning McQueen there, but that's probably why I enjoy all the Cars movies. I know some people thought, well, the first one was okay and they didn't get into it. But to me, it was almost the world I created in my head with my own toy cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I play with them. And I even if you look at the show art for this week's show, I had to go looking everywhere for this. But there was a 1975 Spider-Man car that I used to have, and it was kind of shaped like a spider, and it was the Hot Wheels. It was so neat. But I had that one. And of course, so that was Spider-Man, and I had some Batmobiles. And of course, those were Batman. And so they were all characters. And I even used to go through on the top of my dresser. I had a nice, smooth, flat thing. I'd take everything off the dresser, and it would be like wrestling for me, because I liked wrestling when I was a kid too. I would charge the two cars at each other, just let them loose, let them crash into each other, and see which one got bounced off the edge of the dresser. And then whoever fell off the dresser lost. And I would do a tournament with them. And I had like my villain car was this big like oil tanker, and it was a heavy car. I mean, it was at least a pound or two. It was heavy. So, I mean, it could blast a lot of cars off. But if the funny thing is, if I happened to miss, that one would get such momentum with just a little push that it would go off the end of the dresser if it did not collide with anything. And so it might go off the edge of the dresser, and the other one still survive. And I even had one time that it just kind of worked up. My smallest little lightweight car, which had a number two on it, it was this little tiny race car. And I had one time the tournament popped up where I had the big bully oil tanker and the little two race car were up against each other, and it got lucky because two didn't, because it was so lightweight, it didn't get it gain momentum, and it would stop before it fell off the edge. But I missed with the collision, and that's exactly what happens. The oil tanker ran right off the edge of the thing, and the little two was left standing. I was like, yay, little two. So, but that's the things I would do with cars. I've never been a collector, but I liked to play with them, and they had personalities and stories and stuff like that. So, I mean, did you do anything similar?
Well, I never gave them names or stories, but I really gravitated to the ones that looked familiar to me. I remember one in particular I had. It was an orange Dodge Charger.
Yeehaw.
Exactly. And Never meaning no harm with that one. I also had, I've never seen Blade Runner, but apparently I had Decker's car from it. As a Hot Wheel.
I didn't know they made that, because he kind of, the cars could fly in that too. So I'm trying to remember what it looked like.
I could see that. I just had the usual assortment of funny cars and hot rods. And, I had one Hot Wheels track where it wasn't motorized, but you had to crank it with your hand.
Oh,
and
wow.
As you cranked it, it would shoot a car out. It would go up and flip a U-turn and then come back. And then it would have kind of an X junction. And really what you were doing was to see if you could knock a car, if you had two or more cars on there, trying to knock one out of there. Also, a big way that I've got two younger brothers. And growing up, we had a sandbox outside. And we would often just create little cities in that sandbox with hills and mountains and valleys. And we would just run our Hot Wheels up and down. We'd create roads and find ways. And I'm sure if we went out there and dug through it, we would find the mummified remains of hundreds of Hot Wheel cars out there in that thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a big part of our childhood. It's a big part of my son's childhood. I think he's got more Hot Wheels cars than me and my two brothers combined ever had. Wow. He's got his own little track where, you send the cars through a loop-de-loop and they jump. And, it's one of those things of childhood.
Yeah. And heck, I even remember talking about having a track where you'd have to loop them through. You remember Key Cars?
Yes.
Yeah. Used to love Key Cars. Basically, for anyone who, if you're younger and you don't remember Key Cars, basically you'd have this like orange key.
Yeah,
that you would insert into the back of the car where there was a spring load and it would snap in place, and then you'd squeeze the key and it would launch the car.
Yeah,
it was great. But we had like this; it was like a drag race track, but it had the little key car things in the back of it, so you snap in to your key cars,
right?
And you have a button to release the car. But it was neat. It had this marble thing. This is the thing my brother had, and we'd play on all the time. But you had this marble in like a stoplight thing. And when you'd have to set your marbles up, and then you'd start it, and it would click down red, red, red. And then a green marble would appear. And that's when you're supposed to hit the button. And the little finish line had a thing to whichever hit it first, it would make a thing fall over towards whoever won. So we used to play with that all the time. But that was fun.
That reminds me. We also had a little playset, a couple of them, where it had a little car wash in it that you could send your cars through.
Yeah.
One where you could set a car at the top and just let gravity do its thing, and it would follow a track all the way down. It would open, it would flip open, and I'm trying to describe how it would open. But it made it look like it was a little street with little shops and different things as it would pass by.
And that's the one that you'd have like the elevator where the car would roll in and you crank it up to the top and then you could drop it down.
Yes.
And then they had the cars that would color change. So when you ran them through the car wash, they would turn a different color.
Exactly.
Oh, such fun. It makes me want to wish I still had some cars. I'd be sitting here on the desk, zip, zip, zip. I wish I still had at least I had my Batmobiles that were like, I had both of the movie ones. I had the 89 and then I had a Batman Returns. I do have, still in a package though now, because I'm older, I don't play with the cars, but I have the 66 Batmobile now.
Oh, cool.
And a little thing, which is really neat.
I actually, years ago, I bought the Tumbler as a Hot Wheels car.
Cool.
And so, unfortunately, my son did get that at one point for himself. So I no longer have it carded, but it was still a fun thing, And, toy cars are, they're just part of childhood. And, as much as my son got interested in them, I think what really started it for him was I had a bunch of the original cars from the movie Cars, Lightning McQueen, Doc Hudson, all of those, which I ended up giving him for Christmas one year. And ever since, it's been all about getting as many Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars as he can, which is funny because those Cars vehicles were actually about twice as big as the Hot Wheel version.
Which apparently the Hot Wheels did make, you know, those cars. So yeah, and actually John Locke kind of went through the list of exactly what those types of cars were. And unless we got something else we want to add, let's roll into that, because this is going to be a very long show this week. So let's go hear what John Locke had to say about his Hot Wheels collection and some of the Disney connections with cars.
I've changed the theme of this so many times. When I first bought this house in 2001, this was all classic and muscle cars. So it was Hot Wheels, Johnny Lightning, Matchbox models, metal signs, hubcaps, you know, you name it. And then this started out as all the different NFL teams, eventually went to all Chiefs. Then it went to, you know, trains. Now it's getting more back to my diecast cars. And then, of course, my Star Trek, Star Wars, NASA, you know, displays over there. Still got some of my train stuff, but I'm trying to move all the train stuff over there
to that train wall.
That area over there. And so I still got some I need to take down and move over there and everything. And
I actually have Star Trek and Star Wars sitting on the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and then
people would be like, shocked. You're mixing them. Mm-hmm. And what? These are like Weeble Wobble characters of Star Trek.
Well, they're called, what are they called again? Penmates.
Penmates? I've never seen these before.
Yeah, see, I'll clean them up over here.
They even got a Captain Kirk plate. Oh my gosh, it's a Picard, a little wooden figure.
My wife got me all these.
So can you actually mount them on a pen? Is
that the idea? I don't know. I've never taken them out of the package and tried.
Take them out the package.
Yeah. So I've also got in this notebook, I've got a ton of Star Trek cards, Star Wars cards, Battlestar Galactica cards. I got a whole box of them here.
My goodness.
Never even really been opened. My wife and I started collecting Star Trek cards back in '89 when Star Trek The Next Generation first came out. And that was when we first got together. And so I got books, I got the boxes from my models up here, I got, you know, all kinds of stuff down there. And then she kept, you know, and the funny thing about it is, I love her, I do, but because I change stuff so often, I'll tell her, okay, like, I'm not collecting, like, Star Wars stuff, I'm just doing Star Trek stuff, and guess what she'll go buy me?
More Star Wars stuff.
You know?
It's like, I want to slow down on
this. There's times I almost want to say, okay, you go display that stuff somewhere else. And, you know? But I don't.
The opposite, and she'll get you just yet.
Well, or even with my train stuff. Even with my train stuff, okay. When I first started out, I mainly was going to collect the HO scale, which is what these ones that are down here are. Okay. But then, you know, so that was mainly what I wanted to collect. It's like HO scale stuff, okay? So then...
But what does an HO scale mean?
Well, it's a size comparison, okay? Like, come over here, I'll show you. This is O scale. See how big that is.
And description for us, since we're all audio.
I'm not really good with describing the scales, but it's pretty big size.
Yeah,
you know?
So pretty good size.
That's O scale. This is HO, so you can kind of see the size comparison there. But and I used to be out chasing trains all the time. If I was off work, man, I'd be somewhere, you know, either driving down by the yard down in North Kansas City taking photos. I'd be taking videos. I've got almost 400 train videos on my YouTube page called Legacies on the Rails.
Yeah, I think I've seen some of that. So on Facebook, you're always having photos like, I found this at this location.
And yeah, and everything. But lately with work and everything, it's like once I get off of work, it's like I love what I do. I love it with Barnhart Security Alarm. I love it. But my office is in Grandview, and especially if I've been down there all day, it's like I want to get back to North River, and it's like I just want to really come home, you know, and chill out, you know, and everything. Plus, trains are harder to collect than diecast cars, because you can't just go to Walmart and stuff like that usually and buy, like, train stuff. You know, you got to go to antique malls, thrift stores, flea markets, stuff like that, model train stores, stuff like that. Diecast cars, man, you can go Target, Walmart, Dollar Tree, Dollar General, you know, in any of those, you know, any of those type of stores and get,
or
you know, KB diecast
toy
cars. Yeah, or you can also get those at antique malls, flea markets, thrift stores, you know, stuff like that. So they're easier to buy. They're easier to display.
When I worked at a KB Toy at the Metro North Mall, golly, 20 years ago, we had a guy who'd come in every week to see what new Hot Wheels came in, and he'd have a list of what numbers he was looking for.
Yeah.
So he'd make sure he had every single Hot Wheels car.
I'm not really a series collector like a lot of Hot Wheels collectors are. A lot of people just like to go for the different series. Well, I specifically collect classic and muscle car stuff. So I'm collecting stuff from the time automobiles first, you know, were created up through like the 1970s. Anything after like about the 1970s. Every great once in a while I find something in the, say, the 80s that I'm interested in. Something because it was, they made it so cool. You know, like for example, the 87 Pontiac or the 87 Buick Grand National. That's a really cool 80s car.
Or if it's like, because I noticed you got an A-Team van over there. So if it's connected with something, you know.
Well, yeah, or, well, I also collect TV and movie cars.
Yeah,
and I used to have a whole collection of that stuff.
Oh, hello,
over
Kitty
here,
Cat. I didn't see you.
You know, there. Yeah. But I sold most of my diecast collection years ago in a garage sale, as well as my baseball cards to help pay for one of our vacations. I didn't have to. I just chose to, you know. I mean, thought I'd never get back into diecast car collecting, then got into the trains. But lately, I haven't had time for train chasing, and like I said, because they're harder to buy and so
on.
When I did this setup, when I put this 4x8 board over my pool table, I didn't think to put something underneath it in the playing area, and so now the board, you can't really see, but the board sags a little bit, so the trains won't really run right on. And then I went out and I got stupid, and I got these things to support it, to like make it like a bridge type thing.
Yeah.
Well, this is from my O-scales. There's no way those heavy trains are going to work on this, so I'm going to have to put it back down, you know, down there and everything. But it was also trying to get my HO scale set in there once I found it and everything, so it's going to have to go through changes again and everything, so... I haven't had this running in a long time. It's just kind of sitting here in kind of a display mode right now. And I'm even thinking about moving, like, there's one of the, over there on my diecast display, there's a building you see over there. It's kind of a garage, gas station / garage type thing. And that was on here, and I've moved it over there. I'm thinking about moving some of the buildings off of here to over there and have cars parked outside of them and stuff like that. So, you know, the trains are getting moved from kind of the east wall to the west wall now. And I'm thinking about doing this wall over here is diecast cars here too. That was a lot of train stuff, and now I'm, you know, cleared those out and moving those over here. So, you know, I got police cars and the ambulances.
Oh, I was on Hot Wheels. I mean, I had like 200 feet of track.
Oh, really?
We put it on the hill, and then we make a ramp. Mm-hmm. And then we had our contest how far that they would jump at the end of the ramp.
See, I was weird because all my Hot Wheels, all my cars, were little characters. And so they all have personalities, and they were just, you know, instead of figures, I'd have cars, and I had a villain car. I had, like, an oil tanker who was a big heavy. He was the big bully car. And I even would be weird. On my dresser, I'd have this long, you know, kind of wide dresser. I'd clear off the top. And I would have, like, a tournament. Mm. And I would send them charging each other, and whichever one knocked the other off of the dresser lost. I mean, the winner would be the one still standing. And I would set aside, okay, well, this one won and this one. And I would do tournaments, and I'd smash them together.
There's a lot of serious collectors that do YouTube videos on putting Hot Wheels on tracks and doing everything.
Well, we had it way high, though, and it was about, I mean, all kinds. Yeah. We put the neighbor's track with mine.
Do you ever have one of the, I think it was my uncle's, where it was like a little housing thing. You'd put the orange track pieces in it, and the little housing had these little spinning things with batteries, so you'd set the car in there, and it would launch them around, like these two turning things.
Yeah.
Like a, you know, it had a little motor, so you'd put your cars in and launch them around the track, and every time it would hit it, see, it would just be self-sustaining every time it would hit it.
I kind of remember that.
Yeah. I had that Lionel train system was made in 1870, all original, brand new in the box. I threw it all away.
Oh.
Yeah, whatever.
Probably the coolest car I wish I still had on my Hot Wheels. I actually had a Spider-Man car that was actually shaped like this Spider-Man. It was like a spider. You know, it had all the legs, and they had like these big eyes. It was, yeah, I think it was the Hot Wheels. It might have been Matchbox, but I would love to be able to find if they still manufacture it, because now anymore they do a Spidey Mobile kind of car, and it's like, it doesn't look as cool. But this one was like, it was a black car, and it had like the legs were all coming out from the sides. So,
no,
but
it
was a really neat looking car. It was a cool looking little car. Of course, it was Spider-Man, so of course I dug it. So have you collected any other of the Marvel?
No, that one I think I forget where I even ended up with that one.
Because I was even just telling Tim, I used to have a Spider-Man car when I was a kid. It was all black, and it had legs, mm-hmm. so it looked like a spider. When I was a kid,
I was a big Marvel fan, but these days, I mean, my wife is more of a Marvel fan than me. She's into The Flash and Arrow.
That's DC, though.
Right now. Okay, well, so. she's into that right now. So, but my son likes the Marvel stuff. He likes Spider-Man and Captain America and all this kind of stuff. One thing I wanted to mention is, you know, with the diecast, well, you said I got one of the Disney, Cars.
Yeah, Cars 3.
Well, the reason I bought that
Fabulous
one.
Fabulous Hudson Hornet, cool.
Was because I actually went to a classic car restoration shop in Kearney here recently doing sales calls before I went to do my show one day. And in their shop there, they've got pictures and some models and stuff like that from the guy that actually designed the actual Hudson Hornet.
Cool.
As well as several other cars. As a matter of fact, I've got his picture on here.
I have that same one, the old 1960s Batmobile. I got one of those ones.
Well, my you ought to see my daughter's collection. She's got a huge Batman collection.
I used to have the 89 Batmobile, and I had a Batman Returns Batmobile.
We started collecting together, and then when she got her apartment, she just kind of walked off with most of my with most of my Batman stuff, and I was just like, okay, well, what are you going to do?
You go back and you say, I am vengeance, and you take them back.
Yeah. actually, I know what it is. Smokey Unick was one of the pioneers in NASCAR. Okay, and he's the one that designed the Hudson Hornet and several other race cars that were driven. I mean, back in the early days of NASCAR and everything. Since I was there, I kind of got fascinated with that story. I'm going to actually go up and do an episode of my do a video to put on my blog site, coolcarsusa.wordpress.com, one of these days in their place. I told them I'd come back and do that. But anyway, because I collect mostly classic and muscle car stuff, there's most of the Disney Cars characters are based on actual classic cars.
Yeah.
The
Radiator Springs characters.
Yeah, well, you got like Chick Hicks was the 87 Buick Grand National that I told you about earlier. It's my friend Jeff sending me something here. He's the guy who's, I'll have to look at that video later. He's the guy that's hosting the, thing at Pappas Coffee Express we're doing tomorrow. Flo was the 1957 Cadillac Eldorado. Tow Mater, the tow truck, was a 1951 Intern Harvester L170. The Luigi was a 1959 Fiat 500. Strip Weathers, 1970 Plymouth Superbird, with the Richard Petty paint scheme. Guido was a 1958 Isetta. Sarge was a Willys MB Jeep. Mario Andretti on there was a 1967 Ford Fairlane. Fillmore was a 1960 Volkswagen Transporter bus. Tex Dynaco was a 1975 Cadillac Coupe de Ville. The Sheriff was a 1949 Mercury 8 police car. And Ramon was a 1959 Chevy Impala Lowrider.
Oh, my goodness.
Cars 2. Flynn McMissile was an Aston Martin D85, same car from one of the James Bond movies. Okay.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, David Hubscap, 53 Coombs lightweight Jaguar E-Type. Grim, 1973-74 AMC Gremlin. Mama Topolino, 1963 Renault Dauphine. Uncle Topolino, Fiat 500 Topolino. Professor Zundapp, 57 Zundapp Janus. Acer was a 1975 AMC Pacer. My wife has had a Pacer in the past. Jeff Corvette, Chevy Corvette C6R. Daryl Cartrip, of course, based on Daryl Waltrip of NASCAR. 1977 Chevy Monte Carlo. Brent Mustangberger, 66 Mustang Coupe. Flo, again, 1956 Pontiac Club Demure. Lizzie was a 1923 Ford Model T, and the Queen Rolls Royce. The Queen was a Rolls Royce Phantom IV.
Did you happen to find out they have a statue of him in the middle of Radiator Springs? It was supposed to be like Lizzie's old dead husband.
No,
I can't think of what he's called, but you didn't find out what he was type of old car he was.
From Cars 3. Rod Runner was a 1970 Plymouth Roadrunner, and Sarge, of course, it also had Sarge, Ramon, and Tow Mater that we already mentioned in there. Hot Wheels does a huge amount of Disney stuff. If you just get on the internet and you search Disney Hot Wheels, you'll find things like the Nightmare Before Christmas 5-car set.
Wow.
The 2000 Target exclusive Disney Toy Story 2 NASCAR 3-pack. The Disney 90th Anniversary Collection. The 2018 pop culture set that includes Snow White, Fantasia, Jungle Book, Peter Pan, and 101 Dalmatians.
Hmm.
2018 Disney character cars, Mickey Mouse, Frozen, Winnie the Pooh, The Witch from Snow White, Mike from Monsters Incorporated, and The Nightmare Before Christmas. 2018 50th Walt Disney Mickey Mouse Entertainment Series 8-car set. 2018 Avengers Walmart exclusive 8-car set. I think they made the Mickey Roadster Racer set in conjunction with Fisher-Price.
Yeah, I think I've seen the Fisher-Price sets.
I'm almost sure Hot Wheels made
those. That Roadster series.
And, of course, they make cars and ships based on Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Star Trek. Matter of fact, I've got a couple of the Star Trek Hot Wheels here. The recent USS Enterprise and the more recent Star Trek movies. The J.J. Abrams movie, right. I should say. And then this is the USS Vengeance here. I just picked that up this week.
Which, so, I have never heard of the Vengeance.
Yeah, well, it was, if you look on my Facebook, I posted a link to the fandom site that talks about the USS Vengeance.
Hmm.
When I posted the picture of this, I posted a link to so that people know what the USS Vengeance is. When I was a kid, I had, first of all, I grew up watching The Wonderful World of Disney.
Of course.
I watched the Mickey Mouse Club, and like Tim said earlier, my first crush was Annette Funicello.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPCast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/NeverlandPodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello, everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you.
Yay! Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.